graduate.olivet.edu. Olivet Nazarene University. Where you are to where you will be.
Good evening, you're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, 104.1 FM, KSCO.com. It's now 6 minutes past 7 p.m. I'm Chris Spencer with your weather and traffic updates for tonight. Partly cloudy out there this evening, a low around 48. Wednesday rain likely mainly after 5 p.m., a high near 64, and a 60% chance of rain. Wednesday night rain mainly before 5 a.m. and a low around 54, and an 80% chance of that happening. Monterey Bay boaters forecast for tonight, west winds 5 knots becoming east after midnight, wind waves 2 feet or less, and a west swell 3 feet at 10 seconds. Quick look at your traffic out there this evening. Traffic collision, Highway 1 north at Waddell Creek in the Santa Cruz area. And a traffic collision, 156 at Lucy Brown Road in the Hollister-Gilroy area, westbound. And it's about 62 degrees here at KSCO. Up next, Off the Lip Radio Show.
Opinions expressed in the following sponsored program are not necessarily those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Good evening, and welcome to Off the Lip, the show about surfing and skateboarding. If you'd like to join the show tonight, give us a call at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, here are your hosts for tonight's program, Neil Perlberg and Terry Campion.
Good evening and welcome to the Off the Lip Radio Show, broadcasting from Santa Cruz, California. My name is Neil Perlberg. I'm your host tonight, Mr. Terry Campion. Where is he? Is it another anniversary, Chris? Another anniversary. See, he's not here tonight. But I was able to invite this very, very highly intelligent, recently graduated young lady who's interested in doing radio. So I was like, okay, you want to be interested in radio? Let's throw her to the wolves. Christina LaFranco is in the house.
How's it going, y'all? What's up?
I'm doing good. Now, you just graduated from where? Let's find a little bit about you.
Yeah, I graduated from Sonoma State University, and I spent my last year studying overseas in Italy.
And how did you graduate there?
Yeah, graduated there.
Where?
In Florence, Tuscany.
That is very, very cool.
Yeah, it was a good time
now,
for sure.
Were you born and raised here?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
So you're a Santa Cruzan?
Yep.
Okay, you're here.
Italian
you're
roots, born and raised here.
You're here with a dignitary.
Yes,
tonight.
An honorable guest. Most definitely.
Now, TC and I don't do research, and I see you've done a lot of research over there.
Yeah, I touch base a little bit.
Very well.
Yeah, it's important.
Because our guest tonight is Dr. Charles Lester. And I think he's sick and tired of hearing the word former, but he let me get rid of that. He was the executive director of a very powerful government entity, the California Coastal Commission.
Yeah, and big time.
He lives here in Santa Cruz, so we're going to talk about some questions about the California Coastal Commission because I don't know much about him.
Yeah.
But he wrote a recent article that is very pertinent to Santa Cruz and to the California coast and about the oceans rising and climate control, right? We're talking about the climate and oceans rising, and you wrote an article about that with Gary Griggs, right, Doctor? I want to thank you for coming. I can't believe you came back.
Well, thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. Yes. Nice to see you.
So close, you know.
I know.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Well, that article was The Challenge of Protecting California's Legacy. What would you summarize as the main points there in relation to your legacy, too?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I did write that with Dr. Gary Griggs, who's up at UCSC. He's been in Santa Cruz for 50 years, looking at coastal geology and issues along our coast. But it was a great pleasure to write that with him because there's so much that we've accomplished in the last 50 years in California protecting our coast. So, you know, that legacy, it's hard to summarize in a couple bullet points, mm-hmm. but California is a global leader in protecting public access, maximizing our ability to get to the shoreline for everybody, not just in California, but people who visit the coast. We're a leader in protecting sensitive resources and habitats like wetlands and these amazing species and right. the birds and the animals that come along the coast.
Right.
We've always been at the forefront of managing the potential impacts of industrial development like offshore oil.
Mm-hmm.
So California very early on took a strong position against offshore oil along its coast after the Santa Barbara oil spill in 1969. So the commission was created in the early 70s by Citizen Proposition 1972. And ever since then, it's been a fundamental part, I'd say, of our culture in California to take care of our coast. And there are so many things that we've accomplished that people around the world look to the state for how to do that. So
yeah, totally.
That, you know, the legacy, I could go on about it, but that's what is at risk in going into the future.
The article, if you go to your Facebook page, right, where can people find this article that you and Dr. Griggs wrote? Because it's very, very, it's simple to read. It's very pertinent about what's going on. I mean, you read some of the facts right here. 18 million people squeezed into 233 miles of coastline. There has to be impacts, right?
Oh, there's huge impacts.
Right.
You just need to go down to the beach on here locally when you see all the people coming over from San Jose to go to the beach
right.
and how crowded it is and the impacts that come with all those people. And we've gone out of our way to make sure those people can get to the coast, but for sure there are a lot of impacts.
The first paragraph is the one that kind of gets you. Like it's, I think it's important. I write for Santa Cruz Waves, and I think there was that first paragraph. You want to make it significant.
Yeah, the hook.
So it
totally.
Grabs people.
Yeah.
And yours suddenly grabs people. It says here, the California coast is an edge. It's a place where 1,100 miles of shoreline meets the largest ocean on the planet. Many different forces collide here. A lot of exciting things happen. The coast is a geological edge zippered to. That was great.
That was Gary.
Was it? Zippered to North America by 800 miles of the San Andreas Fault and battered by the Pacific Ocean. That pretty much covers California in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, so much happens right along that edge.
Right.
Literally. And that's why we have a coastal commission and why people are so concerned about it. You have that place where land meets sea and the beach, the shoreline, there's a lot of energy coming together there and a lot of sensitive resources, unique resources because of that dynamic mm-hmm. interface. And that's why we care so much about it.
Are we doing enough? Is California doing enough, or are we aware enough of what's going on with the rising ocean?
Well,
is it something that we're sweeping under the rug right now, or are we doing enough about it?
I'd say that California again is a leader in thinking about that particular issue. Climate change right now, that's not something that people at the national level want to talk a lot about. But California has been focused on climate change and accepting of that science for a long time, and including sea level rise. So, I'd say we're fortunate in California to have a set of decision makers and the public that's interested and believes in using science to identify what things they need to care about and
right.
how to solve problems. And sea level rise is one of those. So California has actually been thinking about sea level rise for quite some time.
Was that something you thought about as when you were with the California Coastal Commission? Something that you were involved with?
It was.
And now yeah. you've left there, no longer with him. Are you still continuing bringing that to the forefront? Still continuing that fight?
I am still working on that. I have an appointment as a researcher at UCSC, and so I'm continuing to do research and writing about sea level rise, the hazards that are created by that interface of the ocean along the shoreline,
right.
and the challenges of adapting to sea level rise over the time of the next 50 to 100 years.
Right.
So at the commission, one of the things I was helped to set in motion was a statewide planning program to help local governments figure out how to adapt to sea level rise. So in Santa Cruz County, for example, there was a vulnerability assessment and a adaptation plan that was just released within the last month or so that looks at all of the future risks to our shoreline, all of the infrastructure, all of the development, all of the natural resources because of sea level rise.
Right.
And increased flooding, increased erosion, and how to deal with those problems.
Right.
That program was really launched at the Coastal Commission in the last 5 years. And so up and down the state now, about two-thirds of the local governments that have area along the coast are right. looking at that question.
A lot of people, when you left there, a lot of people supported you. A lot of people gave you much support. Do you still hear from those people? Are they still... they still, you know, got your back, as it were, or is that a time gone by? that couple of weeks where it was a big furor down there at Morro Bay when that meeting when you were, you know,
right before the vote.
Yes,
right.
It was a furor.
Yeah.
Right.
I, you know, people have been great since that time and still, and. You know, I can't say enough about the support that I had from the public going through that process and continuing afterwards. You know, a number of organizations honored me with their awards mm-hmm. for the recognition they give annually. And
did you get the Off the Lip Radio Show Man of the Year Award? Did you get that yet?
I think that's coming, right?
In due time.
Yeah. Is that in the mail?
It's coming. Yeah, it's coming, Doctor. Don't worry about it.
What about the concept of, you said that California is a really great role model for the world with these ideas. What about the concept of exporting what you stand for and what your research is doing now to the rest of the world?
Well, I think there's a lot that could happen there because, you know, one of the legacies that California has, not just in terms of protecting resources or taking strong actions to protect the coast, but we also have strong institutional legacies.
Right.
So the Coastal Commission and many other agencies that we have in California are they're very accessible, they're open to the public, they're driven by science, and they generally work fairly well together to set up this institutional framework that can be more effective. And so I think what other countries and other states even I think other states will be continuing to learn from California, but what they can learn is not just the need to protect certain kinds of resources, but how to protect them, how to set up institutions that work for the public.
Do you see the California Coastal Commission being kind of this mentorship role with stuff like this, really directly, for example, like New York's coast?
Well, in my experience, people would come occasionally to the state, to the commission, or to other agencies to learn what we're doing. But it's, you know, given the reality of the agency and the everything it has to do and the resources that it doesn't have to do some of those things, it's not in a proactive consulting role or anything like that.
You're listening to the Off the Lip Radio Show right here on KSCO. You can watch the show live if you would like to on Santa Cruz Waves Facebook page. Our guest tonight is Dr. Charles Lester, the former executive director of the California Coastal Commission, who's now off and running, doing many, many things. We're going to talk about that when we come back. My guest co-host tonight is Christina LaFranco, she's got notes, folks. She's on the ball. This portion of the show is brought to you by Toyota of Santa Cruz. You know what? I'm going to promote their Facebook page tonight because I've been doing a lot of Facebook live videos with Toyota of Santa Cruz. And it's a lot of fun doing stuff with Julie and the gang up there. They're just broadening their Facebook page. And we've been, you know, doing stuff on cars, on their service, on their parts, stuff with Julie. We're having fun doing it. So if you get a chance, drop a like to Toyota of Santa Cruz Facebook page. They have been sponsoring the show since day one. I really appreciate that. And just appreciate if you can give them some support. They are the Toyota dealership right there on the corner of 41st and Highway 1. Give their Facebook a like. This is Neil, and TC's not here tonight. Here with Christina and Dr. Charles Lester. We'll be right back with this very short break. Don't go away.
This is Numa and Isaac from Aloha Island Grill. Well, summer's right around the corner here in Santa Cruz, and that means one thing. It's time to come get your grind on at the Aloha Island Grill.
Come over to Aloha Island Grill and eat some food.
We're located on the corner of Portola and 17th Avenue, and we've got a beautiful lanai for you to come sit out on. We've got a fine assortment of plate lunch, fresh ahi poke, and other wonderful treats for you to enjoy.
My favorite food at Aloha Island Grill is Kalua Pig.
We've got ice-cold beer and wine for those hot summer days. And try some of our homemade POG, Passion Orange Guava Juice. It's delicious. For to-go orders, give us a call at 479-3299. Find us on the web at AlohaIslandGrill.com or come on down to 1700 Portola Drive. Aloha Island Grill is a proud member of Think Local First.
As a surfer, sailor, fisherman, or ocean lover, you must understand what's happening at the coast. A wave clock on your desk or wall shows you in an instant on easy-to-read dials exactly what's happening out there now. Sure, the digital information about tides and waves is available on smartphones and computers, but there's nothing fun, natural, or quick about it. We created Wave Clock to marry digital information with old-world instrumentation to provide a real-time view of the tides and waves in a beautiful piece of functional art. Designs developed with other Santa Cruz artisans as Wet Feet Photography, Ventana Surfboards and Supplies, and PPD Multimedia ensure there is a unique Wave Clock for you. Join us at thewaveclock.com to see the latest and download the free app on iTunes or the Google Play Store and begin to see the ocean in a new way.
A&B Insurance has been serving the Santa Cruz community for over 85 years. Manufacturing, wholesale, retail, restaurants, not-for-profits. If you can think of an iconic Santa Cruz company, we've probably worked with them, and we'd love to work with you. Give us a call at 831-423-4304. Check us out on the web at anbins.com. Or stop by at 931 Mission Street in Santa Cruz. And tell us you heard it on the radio on KSCO.
And we are back with the Off the Lip Radio Show right here on KSCO AM 1080 FM 104.1. You can watch live on Facebook with Santa Cruz Waves. My guest tonight, Dr. Charles Lester, co-host. This is going to be a test, Christina LaFranco. This you have to read.
Oh. All right, you got it. This portion of the show is brought to you by Save the Waves Coalition. And this year, they're proud to bring yet again the International Film Festival to Santa Cruz. This upcoming Thursday, November 9th, Save the Waves Film Festival is the world's only surf and environmental film fest that entertains and inspires audiences to love, respect, and protect their surfing environments. With films from Chris Burkhard, Keith Malloy, Lauryn Hill, Morgan Mason, and more, you won't be disappointed. Doors open at 7 p.m. and tickets and information are available at savethewaves.org/filmfest. I'm going to be there. It's going to be awesome. I'll be working it. It's all sustainable. If you want to have a drink at the open bar, bring your own glass.
Really?
Yeah. That's the plan. It's going to be awesome.
All right.
Yeah. No plastic.
And this portion of the show is also brought to you by People's Coffee on 17th and Broma, the best coffee shop. There's a million coffee shops in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Some new, some old, but the best is right there. On the corner of 17th and on Portola Drive, 17th and Bromer. Curtis there, longtime supporter of the Off the Lip Radio Show. That's all I need to say. Support those who support the show. And Curtis has been a longtime supporter with his fresh organic coffee, great food, great stuff. Thank you, Curtis, for being a part of the show. Here tonight with Dr. Charles Lester. I want to talk about Martin's Beach because that guy, that's like an ongoing battle. He's the thorn in the side of like Mark Massara and the attorneys, correct? Or are they just liking that because it's just an ongoing thing? What's happening there? Is the gate open? Is it closed? That whole Martin's Beach thing, it just seems to be like a millionaire's playground. That should we care about it? Should we not care about it?
Well, I've lost track of some of the details being in the Coastal Commission any longer, but so I know what you may know from the press, which is it's still going on.
Right.
The Surfrider and others have done fairly well in the litigation that's been going on, which is about opening up that beach to the public. And last I heard, it was being opened during the day a little bit in response to, I think, the Coastal Commission threatening fines for not responding to the court order to come in and basically get a permit to deal with that issue. So, you know, it's probably going to go on. It's probably going to go on a long time.
The Supreme Court, do you think it's going to end up in there?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's unbelievable. The California coast, and it's as a surfer, I just see so, right, Christina? We surf so many more people in the water.
Oh, totally.
It just seems
more every
so
day.
More people on the freeway. You having a tough time get down here tonight.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the Golden State's 39.6 million people live in coastal counties. Right? Did you write that part? 75% of the state's jobs are based in coastal counties. California's nation's largest ocean economy valued at $44 billion.
Yeah, people have been talking about for a long time that most of the residents in California, they live along the coast in coastal counties. The economy is huge. Again, it's not just part of our culture, but it's a really critical part of our economy. Everything that happens along the coast, the coastal and recreation economy, public access economy. And so, you know, it's a very essential part of what happens in California, but it's also increasingly crowded. Another thing that doesn't get a lot of play yet is as the climate warms, you know, what do people do on a hot day, right? A lot of them come over the hills from the valleys into the coastal zone, and they want to be at the shoreline.
Right.
Walk in
so
with their jeans on.
It's not going to get less crowded.
So if everybody went to the beach the same day in California.
One inch per person? Is that what you're arguing?
I think I read that.
Gary did the math on that.
Unreal. Right?
Yeah.
You'd have 1 inch.
Yeah. That's nothing. And it's only going to grow, too. So speaking to the idea of adaptation in your article, you also mentioned this new bond measure. What would that look like?
Right. So going back to your question before about is California leading on this question, we are leading on that question. And I was happy to see that in this next bond measure that we're going to have to consider, and I think it's next June.
Yeah, coming up.
On the ballot. It's another parks bond, and so it includes lots of potential funding for more acquisitions of parkland, urban parks, parks along the coastline, inland. But it also includes potential funding for what might be called adaptation investments. So, for example, what are we going to do when Highway 1 starts to become increasingly threatened by erosion and starts to fall in? We're seeing that already in a number of places. It's not cheap to respond to that. And one of the things we tried to do at the Coastal Commission was work with Caltrans, for example, to not just throw rocks onto the shoreline to protect the highway. Like you see a lot of rocks up at Waddell, for example,
right.
Yeah.
Protecting the highway there. Well, if we do that, we're just going to end up trashing all of the natural shoreline there and ultimately ruin our beaches. But the alternative is relocating the highway. Or finding some alternative, and that's not cheap. So
super pricey, yeah.
The kind of money that's in this bond measure could potentially go to projects to start helping us adapt to those kinds of situations.
How many permits does the Coastal Commission receive annually, for development? And how many of those are approximately? How many of those are approved or disapproved?
So one of the things that's important to understand is that most of the permits today under the Coastal Act, the state law, are issued by local government.
Okay.
So the way the law was set up is that local governments need to do a plan that meets the state law.
Right.
Once they get that plan approved by the Coastal Commission, they take over the permitting authority. So Santa Cruz County, for example, or the city of Capitola, they have approved plans. They issue most of the permits along the shoreline area.
Right.
That come in. And so those really vary depending on the jurisdiction, how much economic activity is going on. But I'd say in any given year, you might see, 1,000 or more at the Coastal Commission level. And that depends on how you count it. There are minor things and there are major things. But increasingly, more and more permits are issued by local government. The Coastal Commission does have an appeal authority. So in certain places, like right along the shoreline or next to a wetland, between the first public road and the sea, all of those projects could potentially be appealed to the Coastal Commission.
It seems like to do anything around here or in California, within what's the realm of the California Coastal Commission's boundaries?
I like that, California Commotion.
Should we change it?
California Commotion.
Commotion. Commotion.
Yeah.
How far do they stretch back from the coastline? It seems like you do anything KSCO has to be done. You have to get approval from the California Coastal Commission.
Well, you know, KSCO is sitting right here on the edge of a wetland,
right
next to it. So it's in a sensitive spot. The coastal area really varies, and it can be as wide as 5 miles inland. So, for example, in Elkhorn Slough, down the way here, the coastal area that the commission has authority over goes actually almost to San Benito County, the top of the watershed in Elkhorn. In urban areas, many urban areas, it's very narrow. So at the time the boundary was set by the legislature, that was a political process, and many urban areas said, we don't need a state agency messing around with our, you know, everyday urban development. There aren't any coastal issues. Make it very narrow. Okay. So locally, again, Cannery Row, the coastal zone's about a block and a half wide.
Wow. Really?
It includes Cannery Row, basically.
Right.
Santa Cruz, it goes maybe half a mile through the west side, for example.
All right. We got Pete from Santa Cruz on the phone. Pete, you there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you doing?
Good evening. Real good. Hey, I just wanted to say I've been lucky enough to live close to the beach and enjoy all the wonders of the Monterey Bay, so I really appreciate anybody like the doctor that spends his time fighting the uphill battle for all the rest of us to just take for granted. But I wanted to maybe see if you could help me with some local stuff, because some stuff that's kind of puzzled me. For years, La Bahia has sat there, and for whatever reasons, but you always hear the Coastal Commission being blamed, their stop whatever plans, da-da-da-da-da. That's one thing I was wondering if you could shed some light on. And also, how is it possible that the Cal Beach, for year after year, we continually get the worst, one of the worst rated water conditions by this board or whoever rates the water condition, and there's no proactive plan or anything, where I don't read about or hear about any plan to correct it or even find what's causing the problem. Can you help me out with those two things?
Thanks, Pete. We'll take your question off the air. Is that all right?
Okay, thanks. Right, thanks, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a good question.
Yeah, they're both good questions. So, you know, the Coastal Commission, nobody likes to be regulated. And if you have a set of rules, especially coming from the state level, it's going to make things take longer. It's going to slow things down. It's going to change what you want to do. But the reason we have those programs is presumably to protect other things we care about. So La Bahia, it's in a very sensitive spot. It was, I don't know the entire history by any means, but it's got a lot of important issues about how do you want that boardwalk area to redevelop. There's also been locally a lot of good people committed to preserving what's already there. And so not only was there a housing issue there at La Bahia for many years, but also the historic character of that building. So it's has a lot of historic value as a structure. And so those issues, not necessarily coastal issues, but both of those issues have led to a lot of conflict over the years on that site.
Right, right.
The Coastal Commission did play a role in telling the development interests that what they wanted to do a few years back was just too big. And so that's a pretty common dynamic up and down the coast. People try to max out their property, build right to the margins of whatever the rules are to make the maximum profit. But that's not always the best thing for the public. And so we have to remember that things like a view shed, what does the view look like? What does the streetscape look like? What are the impacts to adjacent resources? All of those things also need to be taken into account.
Right.
The Coastal Commission said, you know what, this is a little too big. Go back, follow the plan, because what they were asking to do was vary from the approved plan.
Right, right.
They went back to the city. They approved a new building according to the plan that was already in place. And as far as I know, it's going forward now. On the water quality?
Yeah.
Another really good question and a tricky problem. I don't know what the latest and greatest is out there, but we have struggled with that for many years, including putting in place monitoring requirements and scientific studies to figure out at one point people were saying it's the kelp rotting out there making bacteria, and we were a little skeptical of that. There's also, of course, the sea lions and the bird life. And then the other thing lurking in the background there is, you know, Neary's Lagoon right. and the wastewater treatment plant, and is there any leakage or sewage issues going on? And my understanding is that more recently there's been some attention on that part of the problem, but I don't know what the okay. what the latest thinking is.
Got Gray from Santa Cruz on the phone. Gray, you there?
Yeah, I sure am. Hi, Charles.
Hey.
Hi. How do we balance this gigantic need for access along the coast with conservation of coastal resources? Do you feel like the commission's done a good job, that we've anticipated future needs in such a way that we'll continue to have wildlife and clean water along the coast, or have we blown it? How are we going to balance it?
Thanks, Gray, for calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your question, Gray.
Well, you're an optimist, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'm an optimist. You know, those questions that he's raising, or that tension between access and resource protection, those were always some of the most difficult questions we dealt with. If Gray is who I think he is, he's probably well familiar with Arana Gulch and the issues that we dealt with here locally, for example, where the question was, do we develop a more pedestrian-friendly or bike-friendly access system through that area, or do we not do that and try to protect the native habitats that were there more aggressively? In the end, the commission, you know, tried to balance that issue and ended up approving the local plan for the trail system that you see there now, including a new bridge over the riparian corridor, and also some management mechanisms like bringing in grazing to help with the management of the native grasslands there. So, that tension is in some cases not resolvable if you really believe that the habitat needs to be protected and off limits. And, you know, in all of our management schemes in this country anyway, you see that spectrum. So we have things called wilderness, which get the highest level of protection and aren't supposed to be having these huge human impacts.
Right.
National parks, on the other hand, we all know what happens in those.
Are we having that national park? Is that national park still taking place here in north of Santa Cruz?
The National Monument?
Yes.
Yeah, my understanding is that it is, although I don't know under the current administration how right. much attention it's getting.
Is the oil drilling getting some attention from those of us in the Monterey Bay who yeah. do not want to see oil?
Yeah, there's been a lot of noise at the national level, too, about taking a fresh look at some of the sanctuaries and the protections that places like Monterey Bay have put in place.
Right.
And, of course, you know, Californians will go to the mat on that one.
Of course they will. You've been listening to the Off-Lit Radio Show. If you want to call in tonight and talk to Dr. Charles Lester, the phone number is 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. If you are one of those people who showed your support for Dr. Lester, give him a call and say hi, because he wants to say thanks. This is his opportunity. This portion of the show is brought to you by Santa Cruz Mountain Brewery. They have a big bash, Christina, on Friday. We won't be there.
Can't wait. I may be there.
Really?
Yeah.
So you got your fingers all over town.
On the pulse, yeah.
They have the release of the Alden's Radical Redwood Root Beer. They have the band Take One, Venezuelan Pop-Up, and Root Beer
Amazing.
Float. That sounds good, a root beer float.
Amazing.
I
With root beer or beer?
Root beer float.
Yeah.
Also, on Sunday, they have a home brew class. So if you want to brew your own beer, there's a home brew class at the Santa Cruz Mountain Brewery on the west side. Just go to Santa Cruz Mountain Brewery Facebook page and check it all out. This portion of the show is also brought to you by my good friend John Sisk down there at Lighthouse Bank, member FDIC. Lighthouse Bank, they've been serving the communities of Santa Cruz since 2007. They encourage and support their employees' efforts in the community and provide $1,000 in donations to local nonprofits throughout Santa Cruz County. You know why Rosemary here from the morning show?
Yeah, of course.
You know Rosie?
Legend, yeah.
Why she took her money? She took everything to Lighthouse Bank. You know why?
Because
they let her take a dog in there.
Oh, there you go.
There
yeah.
you go. And John
Bring your
says,
best friend.
The president surfs.
Amazing. Local.
Talk's like, yeah. Is that it?
That's the way to do it.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Keep it local.
Keep it local. Lighthouse Bank. This is Neil and Christina here with Dr. Charles Lester. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is Brett Timmy.
And Cleo's in Cleo's Corner at Pono Hawaiian Grill.
Featuring wraps, teriyaki bowls, plate lunches, amazing and creative salads, vegetarian and gluten-free options, and over 20 different types of poke, all made to order, fast, fresh, and healthy. And what's your favorite, Cleo?
The chicken fingers.
Located at 120 Union Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Call us for takeout at 831-426-PONO or check us out on the web at PonoHawaiianGrill.com. We put the ono in Pono.
Hey, this is Steve Pereira, the beach guy at Bailey Properties in Santa Cruz. My wife Diane and I have been selling beach homes in the Santa Cruz area since 1982. But what we're really selling is the lifestyle. This is what we call Pereiradise. We'd love to have you here in Santa Cruz County. If you've been looking for a beach home or you want to sell your beach home, give us a call. We have the experience, knowledge, and we're fun to work with. Hey, check us out on lifesabeach.com, where you can check out updated listings at the beach. Thanks for your support. Give us a call. My wife, Diane, at 818-5939, and Steve at 818-7064. We're the beach people here in Santa Cruz. Give us a call. We know the beach.
Hey, this is Fig from Surf City Sandwich. We offer the finest craft sandwiches in the county with unique and creative flavor combinations sure to satisfy. Our motto, Go Fresh or Go Home, means we take the quality and consistency of our food very seriously. Fresh local bread and produce is delivered to us each day so you can be sure you are eating the best grinds in town, like our delicious tiki tuna or Vulcan mind melt. Try out our latest creations, the Claw, Chipotle Chicken Club, and Calabrian Meatball. We offer craft beer with 8 rotating taps featuring some of the top local brewers in Santa Cruz. Located at the north end of 41st Avenue in the Soquel Tower Plaza. Call us for takeout at 346-6952. Check out our website for online ordering at surfcitysandwich.com and be stoked on sandwiches.
And we're back for the Off the Net Radio Show. I went to Surf City Sandwich today. I had the Claw, which is like a crab sandwich with avocado.
Amazing. We were there earlier. This is like where you frequent.
Don't tell people that.
Yeah. No, you know? It's a spot.
Because TC's going to come
Italian
back.
Italian owned.
TC's going to come back and go, man, you're putting on some pounds.
Oh, my God.
Eating a Surf City Sandwich, you're crying out loud. My guest tonight is Dr. Charles Lester, who was the... He's just Dr. Charles Lester. I don't know, he's not former anything, but he was executive director of the California Coasting Commission.
Well, yeah, and you're
pretty sure. I think he's glad he's not not part of that scene anymore.
Why don't you speak?
He looks
to
more
that.
Relaxed.
Yeah.
You know what? You look more relaxed than last year.
I thought I almost noticed a sunglass tan on you too.
Yeah,
sign
looks,
of a good time.
Definitely
swim goggles.
Swim goggles.
You definitely look a little more, yeah, a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
This
well,
year,
I'm definitely more relaxed.
Good.
Yeah.
We're happy about that.
If you want to talk, call. But if you have a question for the doctor, 831-479-1080 is the phone number here. And you can watch the show live on Facebook with Santa Cruz Waves. We were talking about earlier about the article that you wrote with Dr. Gary Griggs.
Right.
And so where can people find that article? Because it's very,
yeah, I think
very interesting.
The best place to find it is... at this, it came out with something called The Conversation.
Okay.
So I think it's theconversation.com, maybe.
Okay.
But they did a series, and actually, if you go to...
it is. It's theconversation.com/coastal-protection.
Right.
And you can find it there. Just Google.
Gary did a series in conjunction with KQED up in San Francisco about California dreaming. And so it's one of a series of articles about California.
Well, there's some scary stats right here on this. This is one recent study projects that up to 2/3 of Southern California's beaches may be gone by the year 2100.
No, this is really scary. And so if you think about
it. According to current estimates, sea levels could rise 12 to 18 inches by 2050 and 3 to 4 feet by 2100, possibly higher.
Or possibly higher, KSCO right?
KSCO would be gone.
KSCO would be underwater.
Has some issues. You know, some projections are even as high as 6 feet, which is basically my height, and by 2100.
Yeah.
Or in a most recent study that Gary actually was part of, Gary Griggs, California experts and others projecting this, what they call this H++, high +++ scenario that can't be predicted, but maybe as high as 10 feet. And this is dependent on how the ice reacts to what's happening in the climate. So if we get a huge ice melt in Antarctica and Greenland, sea level rise could be going way up and more quickly than we see it right now. So this is really scary stuff when you think about what we've spent so much time caring about for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
We've spent so much time trying to get access to Martin's Beach, protecting the strips.
It's not going
to
be there.
Well, right. Think about privates, for example.
Right.
All the stuff that's gone on around the privates.
The gate and the whole thing.
The gate and whether people can get out there or not, who can get out there, when can you get out there.
Right.
Well, that beach isn't going to be there. Right. If you look at it now, how small it is.
What about the home, like some of the, like the homes there? I mean, they're building these $1 million homes on, you know, multi-million dollar homes on Opal Cliffs Drive, for example.
So this is the dilemma. That statistic you cited, 2/3 of California, Southern California beaches potentially gone by 2100. Actually, one of the researchers who worked on that is right over here at USGS, Patrick Barnard, who right in Santa Cruz.
Right.
But if you look at what sea level is projected to do, and you think about the slope of a beach, you know, it's not a very steep slope.
Right.
So a 1-inch rise in the sea level, and if the slope is 40-1, that's 40 inches inland with the shoreline.
Right, right.
Well, that's where this projection is coming from. And if you think about 4 or 5 feet of sea level rise, what's going to happen to the shoreline
it's just receding, flat beaches?
Right.
Be gone.
And so, going back to your question about private development or residential development or infrastructure, we tend to build seawalls. That's what we've done for the last, 60, 70 years in California.
We did that out here.
Right. So when you build a seawall, you know, what happens when the beach normally, if there's not a seawall, what does it want to do? We have a lot of eroding beaches.
Yeah.
They're receding.
Right.
And if you let things happen naturally, the beach would go back. March back inland, it would maintain its width because there's nothing changing other dynamics. All things being equal, it will maintain its width and move inland. But if you fix that back of the beach with a seawall, the shoreline keeps moving inland, but there's nowhere for the back of the beach to go, and you lose the beach.
Did you just shake your head when our president said there was going to be, we don't have, no climate change? What did you happen when he said
High
that?
Roll.
When no climate change or a climate issue, we don't have that. Did you just?
Yeah.
No comment.
I can't fathom it.
Well,
I fathom it. Go ahead, Christina, because we got a call. But go ahead, you go first.
Well, you're a former academic, and since your posts, you've now left, and you're back in academics a little bit. What role is your research playing in all of this?
Well, I'm spending a lot of time thinking about this question we were just talking about, and doing some writing about it, and trying to help others who are involved both in government and the nonprofit world think about how to respond to it. So, it really is a dilemma. You think of all the work we've put into protecting our coast, but if it's just going to be swamped by this sea level rise trend, for example, what are we going to have to show for it? What are those millions of people in 50 years from now, or my kids' kids, what are they going to have along the coastline given that tension? So that's why we have to really start thinking about where are the beaches going
to
be.
To start thinking about it, we've got to start doing something about it. Because you can think about it, you can go on thinking about it until you blow in the face, right?
Yeah, and big time action, too. We have to start big almost. It's go time for sure.
Let's talk to Rick from this. I know he's called before. Is it Nick or is it Rick from Royal Oaks?
Yeah, hi.
How's it going, buddy?
Good. I look at the Fort Ord section and I say, gosh, you can have 100 artificial reefs out there, and it might even reduce the need for riffraff, doing that. And how hard is it to put something out there?
Okay. Thanks, Rick, for calling. Appreciate that.
Well, that's part of the challenge is that, while some see artificial reefs or groins, like the groin we have at the Capitola main beach there, as a way to help maintain beaches, others see them as interference with the natural dynamics in ecology of the ocean. So you have to look carefully at those kinds of developments in the water. Although some people think that's the way to go in some of these situations. The thing about our coast is it's so diverse geographically and oceanographically and physically that the problems really depend on where you are. And so what might work in one location isn't necessarily going to work in another location. One of the things that a lot of people are looking at now are so-called green or soft infrastructure. Right. So can we do like an artificial reef or wetlands, for example, or oyster beds? These are big on the in the southeast and the north of the country where the environment is more conducive to those kinds of physical ecological structures and attenuating wave energy and that sort of thing. Harder to do in California where the wave energy is a lot higher and it's just a different dynamic.
How's this going to affect our wave, Doctor? You know, a lot of surface here in Santa Cruz, and you know, how's this rising ocean going to affect? You know, this is a surf show, so you got to make a surf comment.
Right, I'm not
a surf show.
And in relation to the seawall too, we surf in front of it every day.
So I'm not a surfer.
No, you should start though.
I did take physics, my recollection is that, you know, as the water gets deeper, the wave's going to move. And so that was one of the reasons when we looked at the Pleasure Point seawall that's out there now.
Yeah.
One of the issues that was brought up is what's going to do to the surf break. And so there's requirements to monitor the surf break over time as the sea levels change and as the break moves, presumably closer to shore. And then I guess eventually you'll have to do a hard stop.
Do they still monitor the seawall and how it's doing? Is it monitored at all? Because I remember
they're supposed to be, but I don't know the latest.
So. On the phone right now, before we get a break, we've got Judith hanging on. Judith, thanks for calling. Hang on, are you there? There we go. Are you there?
Yes, I'm enjoying your show. Thank you for having him on. I missed the first half hour though, so I don't know if you discussed. Can you tell me what's going on at Twin Lakes Beach? All those.
The parking area there?
Trucks.
The construction?
Yeah, I was wondering if they were moving sand around or something, or if you knew.
That was approved when I was at the commission, but didn't start construction until last year, I think. But that was a project to improve the access there, put in better parking and separate pedestrians and cars better. Basically, you know, because before, if you remember what it was like, it was pretty chaotic out there. And so they're putting in like a little bulkhead public access area and more parking. You may have seen some of the expanded parking inland across the street where the private residents had sort of appropriated the public right of way. Well, that's been taken back and being made available now for public parking. And so
they're just trying to make it.
Yeah. That project was interesting because it does include this hard edge at the back of the beach.
Right.
But the project was specifically designed to last for a certain number of years.
Right.
The county understands that it may have to remove that structure in 50 years.
All right, cool. We're gonna go to break right now, but we're going to come back with a couple more minutes with Dr. Charles Lester. Always fascinating to have the doctor on the show.
Smart guy.
He's a smart dude. We're not. Be right back on this very short break. Don't go away. Was she?
Attention surfers and paddleboarders. Don't let cold water or cold air take you out of the water for 5 to 6 weeks. Protect your ear canals with custom-made earplugs. The Listening Stack in Capitola is now offering custom earplugs molded to fit your ears perfectly, comfortably protecting your ear canals from the harsh elements of the Pacific Ocean. Stop messing with universal earplugs that don't work and try something that does. Mention Off the Lip Radio and receive an extra $20 off any custom-molded earplugs in our store. The Listening Stack is located at the corner of Capitola Avenue at 41st. Listening Stack. Protect, enhance, enjoy. 831-498-9890.
Thinking of a vacation in Santa Cruz? Then contact Beach Nest Vacation Rentals at 831-722-0888 to make your reservation. The very best local vacation management company with their staff will take care of the tiniest of details to better your memorable Monterey Bay holiday. They are pet friendly with a choice of homes on or close to the beach in Santa Cruz and the Central Coast. For further information, go to beachnest.com or follow them on Facebook.
Chill Out Cafe on 41st Avenue Santa Cruz is not just a block from some of the world's best surf, but it is also where you can go relax and order the tastiest grub before and after your sesh. Plump burritos, fresh salads, sky-high sandwiches, and a superb selection of hot and cold drinks. They have something for you. Go to chilloutcafesantacruz.com to view their menu, and to place your order to go, call 831-477-0543. Chill Out Cafe, where they roll the fatties.
And we're back with the Off the Lip Radio Show. Just a couple more minutes left at the end of the show. Tonight, our guest is the one and only Dr. Charles Lester. Always love having Charles on the show. My guest co-host, good job tonight, by the way, Christina.
Likewise.
You know, great questions and smart and funny. And right, doctor, what do you think?
I have another one for you, doctor.
Go ahead. Here we go.
Well, let's talk about this idea of social geography and privilege in relation to coastal areas and gentrification, as you mentioned in your article as well.
Yeah, so I think, you know, backing into that question, one of the biggest failures of our effort in California has been not being able to maintain affordable housing in the coastal zone.
Big time.
And
it's
so
crazy.
When you look, and there's, you know, classic criticism of environmental protection regulatory programs is that once you start controlling things, especially land use, then you limit supply, prices go up. That's why everything's so expensive in the coastal zone, because nobody can build. Well, right. So the argument goes. But we have done a poor job of that. Originally, the Coastal Act did include a requirement to provide affordable housing in the coast, on the coastline. But the Coastal Commission was doing such a good job of requiring that that the legislature took it away from them about 4 years later. So not since 1981 has the commission had that authority.
Right.
But they
it's
used to
not
re-
being managed at all.
Well, only at the local level.
Right.
So to the extent local governments are committed to that goal and are able to do it on their own, it happens. But it's a huge problem, not just in the coastal zone, but statewide, as you've,
right.
I'm sure you've been hearing. But you know, the coast has always been more expensive, even if you provide a lot of housing in the coastal area. It's just costs more to be near the ocean. And
yeah, it's
so,
beautiful. That part makes sense, but it's like out of control at this point now, too.
Well, and with the expanding economy and California's successful economy in the last 50 years, despite the housing lack of a housing policy, the coast has become gradually more and more affluent.
Right.
You get more second and third homes, and so this changes neighborhoods as people no longer actually live in communities. They just own things there. And then most recently, you're seeing a lot of concern about Airbnb and this,
right.
I think what we refer to as this internet-driven
right.
tourist economy, which is really changing the face of some of these communities.
Right.
That's why you're seeing places like Santa Cruz and Capitola start to figure out how to regulate these short-term rentals.
Doctor?
Yeah.
Thank you for coming
on
the show.
Are we done already?
I know. It goes fast, doesn't it? It goes
time
fast.
Time flies.
So you have to come back next year. Maybe sooner. We'll see. I hope you do, because it's always fascinating to have on the show. I need to mention a couple of things. One, Star Benny, who supports the show, going to them after the show tonight. Love those guys at Star Benny. You ate there last week.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. The family atmosphere. They're just a wonderful family down there at Star Benny, right down the street from KSCO. So cheers to them. I also want to mention Darren Cady's coming on next week. He's the director of development for Plantronics. And very interesting. It's going to be an interesting show. And also Bill Miller, the National League, the Major League umpire who called balls and strikes on the most famous game yet in the last World Series, Game 5. When
he's
the Houston
awesome.
Astros won 13-12, he was behind the plate. He's coming on the show December 22nd. So, Dodger fans,
I know there's a show.
Yeah, it's going to be a show.
He's had quite a career.
That was a great game, and he's a great guy. Got great stories. So, Bill Miller's coming back on the show, and after that show, Dr. Doug Hetzler, the Surfer's Ear Surgeon's coming
he's
on.
The best.
Gotta love Dr. Hetzler. I want to thank Christina.
Thanks for having
being my co-host tonight, and Dr. Thank you so much for coming
on the
show. Dr. Charles Lester is here tonight.
It's great.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure as always.
No.
Chris, our engineer, thanks, buddy. See you next week with another Off the Lip Radio Show. Good night, everyone.
Shared prosperity. and our sacred liberty.
Hours ago, Mr. Trump boarded a helicopter. On another one, CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The effort to make a secret trip to the DMZ would have been a surprise. President Trump is said to be disappointed and frustrated that he wasn't able to make it. We did take off from Yongsan Garrison, the Army's headquarters here in Seoul, and after 25 minutes, we landed there. Pilots reported the skies were too foggy, visibility too low to allow for a safe landing.
Retired Secret Service agent Dan Emmett says going to the DMZ is always stressful.
Should the North Koreans decide to invade the South, that's where it's going to happen. And so to be in that area, there is a certain amount of inherent danger. And I think that the president sort of get off on being in an area where there is some danger.
Emmett was on the presidential protective detail when President George H.W. Bush and also President Clinton visited the DMZ. Stateside, governor's race in New Jersey goes to Democrat Phil Murphy to succeed the outgoing Chris Christie. Ralph Northam, another Democrat, will be the next governor in Virginia. CBS political director Steve Chigueras.
President Trump writing about Ed Gillespie, the losing Republican candidate in Virginia, saying Ed Gillespie worked hard but did not embrace me or what I stand for. President Trump is throwing Ed Gillespie right under the bus moments after the guy loses this race. Gillespie did embrace, you could argue, some of Trump's views on issues, but did not necessarily reach out to President Trump or use President Trump as sort of somebody he stood next to while he was campaigning.
Following the shootings at a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, more is being learned about Devin Kelly, the man with the assault rifle. CBS's Meg Oliver.
According to a 2012 police report, authorities in El Paso described Devin Kelly as a, quote, danger to himself and others, as he had already been caught sneaking firearms onto Holloman Air Force Base. That report was filed after the then 21-year-old escaped from a mental health facility in New Mexico during his stint in the Air Force. Police say he was attempting to carry out death threats he had made on his military chain of command.
Retired big league pitcher Roy Halladay in a small plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico.
I'm Peter King. The plane went down around noon local time in Halladay, Florida, and for Pasco County Sheriff Chris Nocco, the loss was personal.
He was a part of our sheriff's office. His kids went to school with some of our kids. He was there whenever we needed him.
Nocco says Halladay was passionate about flying. He loved people and never behaved like the star major league pitcher who won two Cy Young Awards and did this in 2010.
A perfect game!
This is CBS News.
Tomorrow.
Why are you interested in working at our company?
Imagine trying to land your dream job.
I hope I got the job.
And having the whole thing televised.
I'm so nervous right now.
Real people.
The first impression is everything.
Real jobs.
What do you think makes you a good fit?
Real interviews.
I'm always the person that strategizes.
These are the great jobs.
Somebody's about to get hired.
I really want this job so bad.
It's going to be a tough decision.
The Job Interview. Series premiere tomorrow. 10 Eastern and Pacific. CNBC. Get yours.
This is Charles Huskins. Olivet Nazarene University believes that an education unlocks a person's potential. They believe an educated person has a positive impact on his or her community. They believe that education is not something to be contained, but imparted to the world. They believe in you. Learn more at graduate.olivet.edu. Olivet Nazarene University, where you are to where you will be.
Listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, 104.1 FM, KSCO.com. It's now 4 minutes past 8 p.m. I'm Chris Spencer with your weather and traffic updates for tonight. Let's see here. Partly cloudy out there, a low around 48. From Wednesday, rain likely mainly after 5 p.m. 60% chance of that happening, a high near 64. Wednesday night, rain mainly before 5 a.m. and an 80% chance of that happening, low around 54. Thursday, chance of rain again before 11 a.m. Then a chance of showers afterwards for the day, 50% chance of that happening, a high near 63. Monterey Bay boaters forecast for tonight. West winds 5 knots, becoming east after midnight. Wind waves 2 feet or less, and a west swell 3 feet at 10 seconds. Quick look at your traffic out there this evening. Traffic collision, Highway 1 north at Waddell Creek in the Santa Cruz area. And then some road construction, Highway 17 south at Laurel in the Santa Cruz area. And it is about 59 degrees here at KSCO. Up next, the Alex Jones Show.